KPFK. Call now and support it.
The program that you're about to hear is a rebroadcast and has previously aired here on KPFK.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we celebrate the life and legacy of Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X. He was born on May 19, 1925, in Omaha, Nebraska. Malcolm X left nationalism and became an internationalist, including speaking out about struggles around the world. Let us hear a short piece of a speech of Malcolm where he mentions Arab refugees, a reference to Palestinians. Let's hear that clip now.
The difference now in the direction that the struggle is taking from the direction that the struggle has been going in the past, there are many of our people who are thinking more deeply and more broadly and are beginning to see the importance of lifting it out of the national context or out of the domestic context or beyond the jurisdiction of the United States government. And the only way this can be done is by internationalizing the problem and putting it at a level where it can be taken into the United Nations, and then all of the other independent nations on this earth can involve themselves in our struggle and support us. And the only way by which this can be done, instead of it being called civil rights in the future, we're going to have to label it a human rights struggle or the struggle for human rights. And as such, we can then take it into the United Nations through the avenues that have been set up by the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. We can take our problem before the United Nations in the same manner that the problem of South Africa, Angola, Mozambique, Hungary, the Arab refugee problem, it becomes a world problem. And as a world problem, then the Afro-American or the so-called Negroes have more of a chance of getting some real meaningful results, because it's not left up to the one who's responsible for it anymore, but it's put at a level where the whole world can see that our plight is wrong, and they can bring the moral support of the entire world on our side against this force that has stood in our path in the past.
Bring the moral support of the entire world to our side. That was the voice of the late, great Malcolm X. In 1967, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, known as SNCC, issued a statement on Palestine. Malcolm X also did a statement about Zionism, where he critiques the expulsion of Palestinians from their land. Malcolm X traveled to the Middle East, including making pilgrimage to Mecca. He made the Hajj. He also visited other cities in the region. In 1964, he visited Beirut, Lebanon. Just imagine what Malcolm X would have to say today about the genocide now going on in Gaza, or about Palestinian militants who have been resisting the ongoing occupation of Palestine. We could well imagine what he would have to say about that. With the founding of the Organization of Afro-American Unity, Malcolm X called for Black people to organize autonomously, but advocated for white people to join the fight against racism and for economic justice. It was at this juncture that he was killed. On February 21st, 1965, he was assassinated by three gunmen who were, in fact, we are told, we never know the reality of what actually happened, were members of the Nation of Islam. Malcolm, it should be noted, had received countless death threats, including from members of his former organization. Now, despite Malcolm X's physical passing, his ideas have gone on to inspire the Black Power movement in the United States and movements for human rights around the world, including influencing movements in the U.S. like the Black Panther Party, Black Lives Matter, and others. Today, his legacy lives on through the millions of copies of books about him, as well as posters, videos, and other mediums. And what we want to do today to mark his birthday and to celebrate his life would be to bring you the actual words of Malcolm X. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. Mexico has elected its first woman president, Claudia Sheinbaum, by a sweeping margin. The climate scientist and former Mexico City mayor said Sunday night that her two competitors had called her to concede.
Por primera vez.
She said, for the first time in 200 years of the Republic, I will become the first female president of Mexico. She's won upwards of 60% of the vote. Opposition candidate Xochitl Galvez had upwards of 28%. It was the first time Mexico's two main opponents were women. Galvez called the election a historic milestone and advance on gender equality despite her loss. South Africa's ANC, African National Congress Party, lost its control of parliament for the first time since the end of apartheid, white minority rule 30 years ago. The party of Nelson Mandela now is working to form a ruling coalition. Here's President Cyril Ramaphosa conceding losing power.
Our people have spoken. Whether we like it or not, they have spoken. And we must respect their choices and their wishes. What this election has made plain is that the people of South Africa expect their leaders to work together to meet their needs.
The final weekend results are still to be formally declared by the Independent Electoral Commission. Israeli strikes killed 11 people overnight and this morning, including a woman and three children in central Gaza, according to Palestinian health officials. The Israeli military said the body of a man presumed to be a hostage was found in a community near the Gaza border that Hamas militants attacked on October 7th. Israeli forces are also expanding their offensive in the southern city of Rafah, which President Joe Biden has called a red line. Israel's put that stance to test. Friday, President Biden laid out a three-phase ceasefire deal to end the war in Gaza, saying Hamas no longer has the ability to launch another October 7th attack, which spurred Israel's war.
It's time to begin this new stage for the hostages to come home, for Israel to be secure, for the suffering to stop. It's time for this war to end.
It would begin with a six-week ceasefire exchange of some hostages, including women and the elderly. Phase two would be a permanent end to hostilities, and phase three, reconstruction. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called a permanent ceasefire in Gaza a non-starter until long-standing conditions for ending the war would be met. Israel's Defense Minister Yoav Gallant Sunday said they're preparing a ruling alternative to Hamas. He made those comments during a visit to Israel's South Command. Families of hostages rallied in Jerusalem over the weekend outside Netanyahu's office, urging he pursue the ceasefire deal. Some of Netanyahu's far-right allies are threatening to collapse his government if he does negotiate with Hamas. Student protests continue against Israel's war in Gaza. Hundreds At the University of Chicago, walked out of graduation Saturday. Students for Justice in Palestine says police blocked students walking out and used pepper spray on them. At the University of California, tensions are rising between police and activists. At UC Berkeley, a police car was set ablaze over the weekend by a purported incendiary device. It's being investigated as arson. It's supposedly in response to the UC's crackdown on student dissent and comes just days after 80 students were arrested at UC Santa Cruz Friday. Video reviewed by KPFA News shows at least two officers punching a protester hunched over at UC Santa Cruz. Meanwhile, a strike by academic workers on UC campuses is spreading in protest of the UC's handling of student dissent to the war and their demands on divesting from war profiteers. The strike at UC Santa Cruz, UCLA, and UC Davis continues. Three more campuses will strike this week, UC San Diego and UC Santa Barbara today. It spreads to UC Irvine Wednesday. Irvine's mayor, Farah Khan, addressed students on campus Sunday, voicing support, noting their actions have been peaceful.
I've been on campus and I've seen the encampment and I've seen the protesters and I've seen them as peaceful. So remember that we have to continue repeating those words that we do not get judged by someone that wasn't there, that did not know what was going on and doesn't care about what's happening. For those of us that care, we know we're doing it peacefully and we don't incite violence. But violence is incited upon us.
Her remarks counter UC administrators who have said the protests interfere with education and cause harm. Former President Donald Trump says he will appeal the guilty verdict against him. The likely Republican presidential nominee blasted the jury's verdict of guilty on all 34 counts related to hush money payments to Silent Stories that could have hurt his 2016 presidential bid, then covering them up in violation of New York election laws. Alex Gonzalez reports.
I don't know that the public would stand it, you know. I'm not sure the public would stand for it.
Former president and now convicted felon Donald Trump told NBC he'd be okay if he gets jail or home confinement for falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments to adult actress Stormy Daniels. But Trump ominously warns that his followers might not accept it, and the public could hit what he calls a breaking point. Legal observers say prison time is unlikely for a 77-year-old first-time nonviolent offender. Trump is vowing to appeal once he's officially sentenced, which is scheduled just days before the Republican National Convention. His attorney, Will Scharf, is taking an aggressive tone.
We are going to take this as high and as far as we need to, including to the U.S. Supreme Court.
To make the picture more complex, Washington State doesn't allow convicted felons to appear on the ballot. In his first public statement about former President Trump's guilty verdict, President Joe Biden says it reaffirmed that no one is above the law. Biden is calling for Trump and his followers to respect the justice system and not undermine what Biden calls a cornerstone of America.
And it's reckless, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged just because they don't like the verdict.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
I'm Christina Onnestead reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Of Sojourner Truth and the birthday of Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, known as Malcolm X, was May 19th. And today we are going to celebrate his life. We are going to share with you his words. Now, Malcolm X was a Black Muslim minister, an activist, a scholar, and revolutionary who was a courageous advocate for Black liberation, social justice, and human rights. He spoke out and fought against racism in the United States for its crimes against Black and Brown people throughout history. He was also a campaigner for unity among oppressed and impoverished communities around the world, including Asia, Africa, Latin America. He advocated for a new social system based on equality and peace. But Malcolm frequently warned that the fight against racism and economic injustice is extremely difficult, affirming that it must be fought for, quote, by any means necessary, end of quote. After his father was killed by racists and his mother, Louise Little, was institutionalized after all of that happened. She was in a mental hospital, actually, from 1939 through 1963 because of the trauma she suffered. Malcolm X spent years in foster homes. He later spent time in prison, where he turned to Islam for personal strength. He dedicated his life to serving his people and for all oppressed people everywhere. For several years, he was a member of the Nation of Islam, organizing speaking tours and community service initiatives across the country. He later split with the Nation of Islam in 1964, moving on to create the Organization of Afro-American Unity and Muslim Mosque, Inc. He also traveled across Africa and the Middle East, solidifying his internationalist and anti-imperialist convictions. And on that note, I'd like to go now to a clip from the film By Any Means Necessary, where Malcolm is talking again about the internationally and talking about taking the struggle to the UN. Let's go to that clip now.
Are you prepared to go into the United Nations at this point and ask that charges be brought against the United States for its treatment of American Negroes?
Oh, yes. Please. I think you're right in my chair. The audience will have to be quiet. As I pointed out when I was in during my traveling, that nations look, African nations and Asian nations and Latin American nations look very hypocritical when they stand up in the United Nations condemning the racist practices of South Africa and that which is practiced by Portugal and Angola, and saying nothing in the UN about the racist practices that are manifest every day against Negroes in this society. Even in South Africa, those Africans aren't faced with bayonets and aren't faced with police dogs. I would be not a man. If I was in a position to bring it in front of the United Nations and didn't do so, I wouldn't be a man.
Malcolm, do you intend to lead the charge in the United Nations?
Well, I find that to say you're going to lead something creates a lot of hostility, division, jealousy, and envy. I hope to work with any group of leaders or any group of organizations to do whatever is necessary to see that this problem is brought before the United Nations.
Have you had any commitment from any nations in Africa to support your move?
I would rather not say at this time, but one thing I found in travels, all of them look upon us as their long-lost brother.
You realize the implication is that you have had such commitments when you say...
This is your interpretation of what I said. One thing that I found in all of my travels was that all of the Africans, not only the Africans, but the Asians and the Muslims, look upon us as their long-lost brothers. And America had actually tricked many of them into a hands-off policy by giving them the impression that she was honestly trying to do something to solve the problem. My argument over there was designed to prove that it is impossible for the United States government to solve the race problem. It's impossible.
Malcolm, on your trip abroad, you said you sensed a feeling of great brotherhood and that conceivably you would be working toward integration in this country now. At least this is what you're reported to have said. Have you any comment on it?
I don't think that I ever mentioned anything about working toward integration. They haven't even got integration right here in New York City. You have worse integration problems in the North than they have in the South. So if it doesn't work, if you can't bring about integration in New York City as international, cosmopolitan, up-to-date as it's supposed to be, you will never get integration anywhere else in the country.
Are you prepared to work with some of the leaders of the other civil rights organizations?
Certainly. We will work with any groups, organizations, or leaders in any way, as long as it's genuinely designed to get results.
Does your new beard have any religious significance?
No, not particularly, but I do think that you'll find black people in America, as they strive to throw off the shackles of mental colonialism, will also probably reflect an effort to throw off the shackles of cultural colonialism. And they may begin to reflect desires of their own, with standards of their own.
Malcolm, a more controversial remarks was a call for black people to
get rifles and form rifle clubs sometime back. Do you still favor that for self-defense?
I don't see why that should be controversial. I think that if white people found themselves the victim of the same kind of brutality that black people in this country face and saw that the government was either unwilling or unable to protect them, that the intelligence on the part of the whites would make them get some rifles and shotguns and protect themselves. Now, Negroes are developing some kind of intellectual maturity, too. And they can see that having waited upon the government to protect them has been a wait that has been in vain. So any of them who live in areas where the government is not able to do its job, then we do have to get together and do a job of protecting ourselves.
No Negro leaders have fought for civil rights.
What do you mean?
They have
fought?
Begged for civil rights. They have begged the white man for civil rights. They have begged the white man for freedom. And anytime you beg another man to set you free, you will never be free. Freedom is something that you have to do for yourselves. And until the American Negro lets the white man know that we are really, really ready and willing to pay the price that is necessary for freedom, our people will always be walking around here second-class citizens, or what you call 20th century slaves.
What price are you talking about, sir?
The price of freedom is death.
The price of freedom is death. And sadly, Malcolm X was assassinated. But, you know, talking about, he mentions here about the gun clubs and he was asked about it. But looking at the Malcolm's childhood, for example, his mother, Louise Norton Little, she was a homemaker and there were eight children that she cared for. And his father, Earl Little, was an outspoken Baptist minister and an avid supporter of Black nationalist leader Marcus Garvey. Now, of course, Malcolm's dad got death threats, just as Malcolm got death threats, and he got death threats from the white supremacist organization. And the family actually had to move twice before Malcolm's fourth birthday. But in 1929, their home in Mansing, Michigan, was totally burned to the ground. And 2 years later, Malcolm's dad's body was found laying across the town's trolley tracks. Now, of course, the police said both incidents were accidents, but you and I know better than that. And that was Malcolm's formative years. What I'd like to do now, though, is hear more from Malcolm X. And the next clip is a very famous speech that he gave talking about contrasting what he called house Negroes and field Negroes. Let's go to that clip now.
Back during slavery, when black people like me talked to the slaves, they didn't kill him. They sent some old house Negro along behind him to undo what he said. You have to read the history of slavery to understand this. There were two kinds of Negroes. There was that old house Negro and the field Negro. And the house Negro always looked out for his master. When the field Negroes got too much out of line, he held them back in check. He put them back on the plantation. The house Negro could afford to do that because he lived better than the field Negro. He ate better, he dressed better, and he lived in a better house. He lived right up next to his master in the attic or the basement. He ate the same food his master ate and wore his same clothes. And he could talk just like his master. Good diction. And he loved his master more than his master loved himself. That's why he didn't want his master hurt. If the master got sick, he'd say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick?" He was as sick as the master. When the master's house caught a fire, he'd try and put the fire out. He didn't want his master's house burned. He never wanted his master's property threatened. And he was more defensive of it than the master was. That was the house Negro. But then you had some field Negroes who lived in huts, had nothing to lose. They wore the worst kind of clothes. They ate the worst food. And they caught hell. They felt the sting of the lash. They hated their master. Oh, yes, they did. If the master got sick, they prayed that the master died. If the master's house caught a fire, they prayed for a strong wind to come along. This was the difference between the two. And today you still have house Negroes and field Negroes. I'm a field Negro. If I can't live in the house as a human being, I'm praying for a wind to come along. If the master won't treat me right and he's sick, I'll tell the doctor to go in the other direction. But if all of us are going to live as human beings, as brothers, then I'm for a society of human beings that can practice brotherhood. So before I sit down, I want to thank you for listening to me. I hope I haven't put anybody on the spot. I'm not intending to try and stir you up and make you do something that you wouldn't have done anyway. I pray that God will bless you in everything that you do. I pray that you will grow intellectually so that you can understand the problems of the world and where you fit into in that world picture. And I pray that all the fear that has ever been in your heart will be taken out. And when you look at that man, if you know he's nothing but a coward, you won't fear him. If he wasn't a coward, he wouldn't gang up on you. He wouldn't need a snitch. This is how they function. They function in mobs. That's a coward. They put on a sheet so you won't know who they are. That's a coward. No. The time will come when that sheet will be ripped off. If the federal government doesn't take it off, we'll take it off.
Although some of us may have disagreed with Malcolm X, or we disagree with each other about him, let his going from us serve to bring us together.
Alrighty, and quite a response there. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. That was Malcolm X giving his famous House Negro versus a Field Negro speech. And today we are lifting up and celebrating the life of Malcolm X, who was born on May 19, 1925. This is Sojourner Truth, hosted by Margaret Prescott. And what I'll do, I'll also, in between the clips, just share you a few tidbits about Malcolm's history, a bit unknown history about his mother. She was actually of Grenadian descent, Grenada in the Caribbean, and her parents were considered, quote unquote, liberated Africans. They were captured from what is now Nigeria. And subsequently, the story is they were actually freed from the slave ship by the and settled in Grenada. And so a little bit there about Malcolm's mom. But she was also active politically. I mean, she helped to raise 9 children. But she also was a part of the Universal Negro Improvement Association. Her uncle actually had introduced her to Garveyism. So I'll share a bit more as we go along. But what I'd like to do now is to go to more from Malcolm X, where he speaks. He says, "I'm not speaking as a Democrat or as a Republican." Let's go to that clip now.
"And when I speak, I don't speak as a Democrat or a Republican, nor an American. I speak as a victim of America's so-called democracy. You and I have never seen democracy. All we've seen is hypocrisy. When we open our eyes today and look around America, we see America not through the eyes of someone who has enjoyed the fruits of Americanism. We see America through the eyes of someone who has been the victim of Americanism. We don't see any American dream. We've experienced only the American nightmare. We haven't benefited from America's democracy. We've only suffered from America's hypocrisy. And the generation that's coming up now can see it and are not afraid to say it. If you go to jail, so what? If you're black, you were born in jail. If you black, you were born in jail. In the North as well as the South. Stop talking about the South. Long as you south of the Canadian border, you're South. Don't call Governor Wallace a Dixie governor. Romney is a Dixie governor. $22 million black victims of Americanism are waking up, and they're gaining a new political consciousness, becoming politically mature. And as they become, develop this political maturity, they're able to see the recent trends in these political elections. They see that the whites are so evenly divided that every time they vote, the race is so close, they have to go back and count the votes all over again. And which means that any block, any minority that has a block of votes that stick together is in a strategic position. Either way you go, that's who gets it. You're in a position to determine who go to the White House and who stay in the doghouse. You're the one who has that power. You can keep Johnson in Washington, D.C., or you can send him back to his Texas cotton patch. You're the one who sent Kennedy to Washington. You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they've brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump.
Well, because you're chumping, you know, it's just amazing listening to those words of Malcolm X. I mean, of course, he's talking about the time that Lyndon Baines Johnson, you know, was in the White House and the election there. But the significance of the black vote, very, very much on point today. One of the reasons that now President Biden spoke at Morehouse, a historically black college, by the way, where Martin Luther King graduated from. And he spoke at Morehouse on Malcolm X's birthday, which really outraged a lot of people. But absolutely true that the black vote, very important in determining the election, and one of the reasons that there have been so many efforts to suppress the right to vote among black people and also young people as well. What we're going to do now, though, is we're going to take a short station break. And when we return, we will be hearing more from the words of Malcolm X as we mark his birthday, which was May 19th. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And ships minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing?
All right.
These songs of freedom.
The late, great Bob Marley redemption song. I just love that. There is so much to it. This is Margaret Prescott host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. And of course, you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. And we also want to welcome all of the Sojourner Truth listeners across the Pacifica affiliate and flagship stations. You can also hear the show 24/7 nationwide and worldwide on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today I'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Memphis, Tennessee, and internationally to our SoundCloud listeners in the Middle East. We are hearing the words of Malcolm X, and I want to go now directly to a talk that he gave in 1965 about the prospect for freedom. Let's go to that clip now.
Tonight, during the few moments that we have, we're going to have a little chat like brothers and sisters and friends and probably enemies too, about the prospect for peace or prospect for freedom in 1965. If you notice, I almost slipped there and said peace. Actually, you can't separate peace from freedom. No one can be at peace unless he has his freedom. You can't separate the two. And this is the thing that makes 1965 so explosive and so dangerous. The people in this country who in the past have been at peace and been peaceful were that way only because they didn't know what freedom was. They let somebody else define it for them. But today, 1965, you find those who have not had freedom and not in a position to define freedom. They're beginning to define it for themselves now. And as they get in a position intellectually to define freedom for themselves, they see that they don't have it. And it makes them less peaceful or less inclined toward peace. So in discussing this topic tonight, prospects for freedom in 1965, I think we have to go back at least 12 years or 10 years to the time when the struggle of the black man in America began to be projected into the limelight, not only in this country, but throughout the world. It started primarily with the Supreme Court decision, so-called desegregation decision, and I should say so-called desegregation, so-called decision, because there has been some doubt as to what they really handed down. The leaders themselves never intended and never do intend for our people to go too far. Their primary purpose in our midst has always been to contain our struggle, not lead our struggle. Proof of which, seldom are they seen until the irresponsible elements in the black community begin to explode. And then they go all the way around the country to grab one of them from wherever he's traveling and bring him in to cool things down, to tell us to be cool, or tell us to take it easy, don't rock the boat. This is their function. This is their role. At least it has been up until recent times. They never have been put in the role that they're in with the intention by the one who puts them there of them leading us into any uncompromising and militant struggle.
All righty. And then that clip from Malcolm X. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and we are lifting up Brother Malcolm X today. Now, I want to just pause for a minute and tell you a story that if you're a regular Sojourner Truth listener, you've heard me speak. I love to tell it any show we do on Malcolm X. And the story is when my sister and I knew immigrants from Barbados, and we were immediately involved in the civil rights movement. My aunt Mildred Scott in Brooklyn was a member of the Congress of Racial Equality, and she made sure that we were out there on the picket lines. At one protest, we got tired and we sat down on a bus bench, and marchers kept going. And then we heard a voice sounding with much authority saying, "Sisters, what y'all doing?" And we, looking down respectfully, we said, "We tired." And the voice said, "Sisters, get up, get on up." And we looked up to see who it was, and it was Malcolm X. I'll never forget that moment. I tell that story so many times, and anytime I get tired doing movement work, I think of Malcolm X saying, "Sisters, get on up, get up." So that's a kind of a personal Malcolm X story there. There's so many quotes, famous quotes from about Malcolm X. One of the things that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, Malcolm X said about Dr. King, he said, "Dr. King wants the same thing I want, freedom." And he also said, "I want Dr. King to know that I didn't come to Selma to make his job difficult. I really did come thinking I could make it easier. If the white people realize what the alternative is, perhaps they will be more willing to hear Dr. King," right? And that was a conversation Malcolm had with Coretta Scott King. What I'd like to do now, though, is to go to, all of his speeches were famous, a speech that Malcolm gave in Detroit. And he often, by the way, started his speeches by acknowledging friends and enemies, because he figured, well, he was being tracked. And so there were enemies in the audience. And indeed, that was the case, as happened with his assassination. But let's hear more from Malcolm right now.
Distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies. I want to point out first that I'm very happy to be here this evening. And I'm thankful for the invitation to come here to Detroit this evening. I was in a house last night that was bombed, my own. But it didn't destroy all my clothes at all. But you know what happens when fire dashes through it. They get smoky. The only thing I could get my hands on before leaving was what I have on now. And it isn't something that made me lose confidence in what I'm doing, because my wife understands, and I have children from this size on down, and even in their young age, they understand. I think they would rather have a father or a brother or whatever the situation may be, who will take a stand in the face of any kind of reaction from narrow-minded people, rather than to compromise and later on have to grow up in shame and in disgrace. Tonight, one of the things that has to be stressed is that which has not only the United States very much worried, but which also has France, Great Britain, and most of the powers who formerly were known as colonial powers worried also. And that primarily is the African Revolution. They're more concerned with the revolution that's taking place on the African continent than they are with the revolution in Asia and in Latin America. While I was traveling, I had a chance to speak in Cairo, or rather Alexandria, with President Nasser for about an hour and a half, who's a very brilliant man, and I can see why they're so afraid of him. And they are afraid of him. They know he can cut off their oil. And actually, the only thing power respects is power. And whenever you find a man who's in a position to show power against power, then that man is respected. But you can take a man who has power and love him all the rest of your life, and nonviolently and forgivingly and all the rest of those off-time things. And you won't get anything out of it. So I also had a chance to speak to President Nyerere in Tanganyika, which is now Tanzania, and also Kenyatta, whom I know that all of you know him. He was the head of the Mau Mau, which really brought freedom to many of the African countries. This is true. The Mau Mau played a major role in bringing about freedom for Kenya, and not only for Kenya, but other African countries, because what the Mau Mau did frightened the white man so much in other countries until he said, well, I better get this thing straight before some of them pop up here. And this is good to study, because you see what makes him react. And nothing lovingly makes him react. And nothing forgiving makes him react. The only time he reacts is when he knows you can hurt him. And when you let him know you can hurt him, he has to think two or three times before he tries to hurt you. But if you're not going to do nothing but return that hurt with love, why, good night. He knows you're out of your mind. And also, I had an opportunity to speak with President Azikiwe in Nigeria, President Nkrumah in Ghana, and President Sekou Touré in Guinea. And in all of these people, I found nothing but warm friendship, sympathy, and a desire to help the black man in this country in fighting our problem. We have a very complex problem. Now, I hope you forgive me for just speaking so informally tonight, but I frankly think it's always better to be informal. As far as I'm concerned, I can speak to people better in an informal way than I can with all of this stiff formality that ends up meaning nothing. Plus, when people are informal, they're relaxed. When they're relaxed, the mind is more open, and they can weigh things more objectively. And whenever you and I are discussing our problems, we need to be very objective, very cool, calm, collected. But that doesn't mean we should always be. There's a time to be cool and a time to be hot. And see, you got messed up into thinking that there's only one time for everything. There's a time to love and a time to hate. Even Solomon said that. And he was in that book, too. You just taking something out of the book that fits your cowardly nature. And when you don't want to fight, you say, well, Jesus said don't fight. But I don't even believe Jesus said that. Also, I am very pleased to see so many who have come out to always see for yourself, where you can hear for yourself and then think for yourself. Then you'll be in a better position to make an intelligent judgment for yourself. But if you form the habit of listening to what others say about something or someone, or reading what someone else has written about someone, somebody can confuse you and misuse you. So as Afro-Americans or black people here in the Western Hemisphere, you and I have to learn to weigh things for ourselves. No matter what the man says, you better look into it.
Norway was more supportive.
All righty. And there you heard Malcolm X addressing friends and enemies, as he often said when he was speaking. And today we are lifting up Malcolm X. We are remembering his birthday and playing as much of his voice as possible. And I've been also sharing some tidbits in between clips with you about Malcolm. Now, we all know that Malcolm, of course, has spent some time in prison, and it was there that he converted to Islam. And, you know, so that was some of his formative years. And he did go in 1964. He went on pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia. The trip was a life-altering one for him. He said for the first time, Malcolm said he shared his thoughts and belief with different cultures and found the response to be overwhelmingly positive. When he returned, Malcolm said he had met, quote, blonde-haired, blue-eyed men I could call my brothers, end of quote. He returned to the United States with a new outlook on the situation there and new hope for the future. And, you know, he believed in autonomy. He believed in black autonomy, the right for us to be able to come together to meet and develop our demands. He also knew that the movement had to be international and really open to those across race. So you can have an autonomous base as black people, but you could also organize across race. Malcolm was a leader and a compelling speaker and spokesperson for the Nation of Islam before he broke with the nation. And in fact, Muhammad Speaks, which was the newspaper of the Nation of Islam, was founded by Malcolm X in 1957. And this beginning in the 60s, he was very active in the nation, doing a lot of speaking and appearing on television and universities, including Harvard Law School, Howard University, Columbia University, and others. And in 1963, the New York Times reported that Malcolm X was the second most sought after speaker in the United States. Let us go now to hear more from Malcolm X.
I was on a plane between Algiers and Geneva, and it just happened that two other Americans were sitting in the two seats next to me. None of us knew each other, and the other two were white, one the male, the other a female. And after we had been flying along for about 40 minutes, the lady, she says, "Can I ask you a personal question?" I said, "Yes." She said, well, she had been looking at my briefcase, and she said, "Well, what does that X?" She says, "What kind of last name could you have that begins with X?" So I said, "That's it, X." And she said, "Well, what does the M stand for?" I said, "Malcolm." So she was quiet for about 10 minutes. And she turned to me and she says, "You're not Malcolm X." You see, we had been riding along in a nice conversation, like three human beings, you know, no hostility, no animosity, just human. And she couldn't take this. She said, "Well, you're not who I was looking for, you know?" And she ended up telling me that she was looking for horns and all that, and for someone who was out to kill all white people, as if all white people could be killed. This was her general attitude, and this attitude had been given her, this image had been given her by the press. So before I get involved in anything nowadays, I have to straighten out my own position, and which is clear, I am not a racist in any form whatsoever. I don't believe in any form of racism. I don't believe in any form of discrimination or segregation. I believe in Islam. I'm a Muslim, and there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim. Nothing wrong with the religion of Islam. That just teaches us to believe in Allah as the God, and those of you who are Christians probably believe in the same God. Because I think you believe in the God who created the universe, and that's the one we believe in, the one who created the universe. The only difference being, you call him God, and we call him Allah. Jews call him Jehovah. If you could understand Hebrew, you'd probably call him Jehovah too. If you could understand Arabic, you'd probably call him Allah. But since the white man, your friend, took your language away from you, during slavery, the only language you know is his language, you know, your friend's language. So you call him, you call for the same God he calls for. When he's putting a rope around your neck, you call for God, he calls for God. And you wonder why the one you call on never answers.
All righty, there goes my hero. And I remember Jerry Quigley, who really loved Malcolm X. He was on the airwaves of KPFK for many years and loved to play this song when he talked about Malcolm X. Well, we are out of time. We're going to have to wrap up this Sojourner Truth special where we honored Malcolm X. I'd like to thank Jose Benavides for all of his work today, helping to find and gather those clips of today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for more programming on your local Pacifica station, Sojourner Truth. We'll be back on the air next Tuesday. You'll please remember to stay safe. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Thank you.
The program that you just heard was a rebroadcast. It previously aired here on KPFK.
Hey, this is Teddy Robinson, your soul brother to the night. Join me every Sunday night, Monday morning, for the Stairway to Heaven from 3 a.m. until 5:30 a.m. Check this out.
That's What Love Is Made Of. That's 2 minutes and 57 seconds of Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
To Delphonics right now, and didn't I blow your mind this time? Welcome to the Stairway to Heaven. I'm in that groove at the present moment. We're going to rewind the machine and go back with Stevie Wonder.
Kind of telling the stories of what's going on in the streets of love and things of that nature in words and in music. You listen long enough, you know, you just may find your story somewhere in the nooks and crannies of the classic soul music.
It's groovy, it's funky, and it's classic soul. Every Sunday night, Monday morning, from 3 a.m. until 5:30 a.m. right here on KPFK 90.7 FM. You will dig it.
Hey, I'm Tom Nixon.
Patrick Milligan.
Art Podell.
Mark Humphrey.
Mary Catherine Alden.
We host the Saturday morning music show, Roots Music and Beyond, Saturday mornings, 7 to 9.
For a rare blend of
bluegrass,
Americana,
global roots,
artist interviews,
blues, and
the unexpected.
Invite us to breakfast. Why don't you?
Or along for a ride.
Start the day with music you won't hear anywhere else.
Saturday mornings,
7 to 9 on
Roots Music
and Beyond.
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 Heard exclusively here on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio for all of Southern California, KPFK, Los Angeles. We are in our fund drive, and as you know, we are listener-supported. We depend upon your funds and your support to keep this radio station going strong. 818-985-5735 is the number to call if you want to donate for Sojourner Truth or the programs that you heard earlier, such as Informativo Pacifica and Sojourner Truth. Democracy Now! Is coming up next. So we're asking you to go to your phones and support this show, this radio station, in this time of need as we look for more information on Gaza and what's happening in the Middle East, KPFK is the station that you turn to. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, and online at kpfk.org. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, a show that you support here on KPFK, and we thank you. And when our last fund drive, you came through and you supported this program, this radio station, and we appreciate that. But once again, we are listener supported. It's because of you that we stay strong. Stay with us now for Democracy Now! Coming up next.